It's Waddle and Sylvie.
Hi.
Hi. Hi.
Follow us on the gram at Waddle and Sylvie and at ESPN underscore Chicago. This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
Gasol trying to find Kobe. And Kobe will get it for the win. Got it! Got it! He is hard to believe.
No, he's not.
Amazing again at the buzzer.
Is there anybody more clutch than that man?
Love taking those final shots. Five titles. The 81-point game. The 60-point game. In his finale, never thought we'd be talking about this after the weekend, that we'd be grieving over Kobe Bryant. But we are. The Lakers-Clippers canceled for tomorrow. Shams, who I just mentioned, Waddle, just tweeted this out. One final conversation. LeBron James and Kobe Bryant had phone call late Saturday night after James passed Bryant on the NBA scoring chart, sources tell The Athletic and Stadium. Several Lakers players listened into the call and what would be their final memory of Bryant's voice.
Wow. And that adds probably to the entire, you know, the issue with regard to postponing the game as well. I mean, this is probably something that's going to take more than a few days to get out of there.
Yeah, LeBron has not tweeted or made a statement about it yet. You saw him at the airport coming back from Philadelphia, where it was such a far distant shot from like a helicopter, I think, itself. And like you looked at and you could tell that he was grieving. And we played earlier today the 4-minute post game on just how he reflected on what Kobe meant to him as a guy that he looked up to when he was a high school player. And then it became more into focus that, hey, I could become a guy who could go right to the NBA as well.
It's interesting, too, as I've said all day, you know, kind of for me, the cool thing was to watch him segue away from the basketball courts and into different ventures in his life, whether it was coaching his daughter's team, being involved in the project that resulted in an Oscar win for him, the business. I saw him, I can't remember the date, but I saw him on CNBC recently as well, talking about one of his other business ventures and all of the different groups he was willing to lend his name and his voice to in the area and around the United States. So, I mean, it was really cool to see him fill that void that obviously was left by not playing basketball anymore and being comfortable in his new role in whatever that was, as a father, as a family guy, and as somebody who was involved in the business world and had different interests as well.
Michael Wilbon is our friend. He normally joins us on Wednesday. He's been on ESPN's coverage, and one of the things that I remembered was his interview with Kobe, his sit-down in his final year, asking him, hey, do you think you're going to regret this thing? And when I watched Michael yesterday, the one thing that stood out to me, Michael, was you saying that you haven't quite processed this yet, whether it's talking about past tense, about Kobe Bryant. Just tell us what the last 24 hours has been like.
Yeah, I still haven't. And I think what happens is you lose yourself in talking about it. It's cathartic. You sort of get over the immediate sadness, but not the profound sadness that comes at some point. You got to shut up and just deal with it. And I think that's what we do in media, and we try to make sense of it for other people, and we deal with other people and their information processing, but not our own. It's very disingenuous, but it's what we do. And to be honest, what we hide behind, and how I'd rather do that than have to deal with it. Because it's sad. It's sad that, you know, I'm conflicted about some of it. I don't want to really talk about where this place in history is, basketball-wise. But we have to. We should. I don't want to talk about that. I don't care about it. I care about the other people on that plane, on that helicopter, who lost their lives, who aren't being talked about very much, who made their own enormous contributions in whatever ways they were, mostly private except for the coach, who was very successful. There's a lot of stuff that just, you know, gets to you in some way. And it's not to say that I don't feel comfortable talking about Kobe Bryant, who I probably covered over the 20-year period as much as any single athlete that I've covered, except for Michael Jordan, even more than Cal Ripken, and that was a large chunk of my career. And they're, you know, there are a handful of people, Magic through the second half of it. There are a handful of people, and so I'm comfortable talking about it, but at the same time, you know that you still haven't.
Yeah.
There's certain things that come up. I haven't really, really, truly talked to Matthew about it. We talked on the surface. And what sort of he remembers about meeting him and what he remembers about about Kobe taking him aside when he told Kobe that he shouldn't have to go to school because he was going to play in the NBA. So I don't know what that conversation was like. Neither one of them ever told me. So there's a lot of stuff. There's a lot of stuff that comes up, and you don't deal with it because you're busy being in your official capacity.
And Mike, I think it's meaningful and it's important that you mention the others who perished in this horrible tragedy as well. We focus on Kobe and indirectly his daughter as well because we're in the world of sports, but we don't lose focus on the fact that this tragedy touched many more as well. As we focus on Kobe, what is the lasting impression he left you with? And you see him differently than we see him. We see him out from a distance and admire the tremendous basketball skill, but you get to know some of these guys personally and how the persona differs from the assassin on the court to the father of four daughters and the guy who was segueing into an entirely different aspect of his life.
Yeah, I guess I'm left with a few things. One of them I'd never talked about until about an hour and a half ago on PTI. And you guys, will resonate with anybody who followed Michael Jordan as much as the whole city of Chicago has. And that was, they were compared all the time. And Kobe made no secret of idolizing Michael, and Michael made no secret of Kobe being like a little brother to him, and he understood that he had great influence on him. it was all the time we was talking about Michael, and Kobe knew that, and he knew that I covered him. And so sometimes there'd be real questions, like after this whole scrum is gone from his locker, he would say, "Hey, what was Michael like?" To be interviewed after he had a 50-point game or something like that. And it'd be real, real questions. Kobe was a sponge. He was, like, just uber curious. But then there were some nights where playfully, and this happened after a lot of games that I attended, so mostly playoff games, in which Kobe had some 48-point game, some huge, crazy game, and the Lakers would win. And Kobe's running the locker room, and Sylvie knows about this, probably Tommy more than you, but the reporters are sort of lined up outside the door of the locker room after a game. And Kobe would intentionally bump into me, give me an elbow or something, a hip, a shoulder. And then he'd lean down where nobody else could hear, and he'd say, "How would your boy have done tonight? Would your boy have had 48 tonight? How would your boy have done? Could your boy have guarded, LeBron tonight for 32 minutes? And it was all playful. And he knew he couldn't say it to everybody else because he knew they wouldn't treat it as being playful. And they wouldn't have treated it the same way I did. And I tried to half dozen times make him go on the record with some of the stuff, and of course he wouldn't bite. But it was great fun. It was just, it showed how, yes, he's in the moment doing that, and immediately after, he can just sort of conjure up all the circumstances around it. He might not have known I was at that game. He could just see me standing over there. He'd run straight beeline. And people thought it was sometimes other reporters thought it was like some act of aggression. People think all kinds of stupid stuff, and it's Kobe getting close enough where nobody else can hear. Say, "Yeah, your boy wouldn't have had a triple-double tonight. He wouldn't have done that." And, the only other person I would ever tell was Michael, because he knew Michael got such a kick out of it. He loved it. And, there's stuff like that. It is not a game. There's no game that comes to my mind. I wasn't a Laker fan. I wasn't a Laker guy. I didn't grow up in Southern California. It didn't mean anything to me. It didn't mean any more than Magic's games. Didn't mean any more than Kareem's games I watched as a teenager. They were three of the 10 greatest players who ever lived. So I'm sorry if somebody's a Laker fan and they're saying, "What about the 81 he scored against Ronald?" I don't care about that. And I loved being there. I loved watching it in the moment. I loved the lob passing through to Shaq. I remember punching David Aldridge next to me as we both sat there in disbelief. Don't ever let me fool you about how much I love sports and watching it. But as you guys just said, when you get to know the guys, would I answer the question the same way about Jordan? No, because it means something different to me, because I grew up a Bulls fan. You know, I grew up, so the games and the championships meant something different to me. And I don't even know if I was answering that question about Michael, and I don't want to answer it for 40 more years. I don't want to ever answer that. I'm older than he is. I shouldn't have to ever answer that. I don't know. I probably would. There's probably too many personal things that I would think of for him, too.
Michael, I was going down the rabbit hole and watching all the highlights of Kobe, and I remember the 1998, his first All-Star game, Kobe Bryant's, when Michael was still the MVP, but it was sort of like a torch passing. And now we blink, and now the game is going to be in the arena that Michael built, and Kobe's not going to be there, not going to be with us. In general, do you believe that this, like, we've seen some emotional All-Star games before when Magic came back. Do you think this could be one of the most emotional we've ever seen with NBA players almost dedicating this game to him?
I guess. And I think it depends on how the league decides to honor him before, you know, during that weekend. I mean, so much will depend on that. Remember also, I'm sure that a lot of time and energy and intellect is going to be, it will be spent trying to figure out how to honor David Stern.
Right.
And so there's a lot to unpack, if you will, for that All-Star weekend. And I don't know. I think that people rise to the occasion. You know, I just found out before I went on the air with you guys that the game between the Lakers and the Clippers is going to be canceled.
Yes.
Postponed tomorrow. And I don't know. I'm not about to argue it. I'm not. I am a little surprised. I thought that, you know, if anything, I said on the air just now that if anything, Kobe would have said, let's play two. You know, I just think that's who he was. And that's who he is to us. I mean, you know, there was no walking away from anything. I mean, you know, if you want to compare, I mean, he and Michael and Larry and Magic, they all had, that's the thread. That's the connective thread. They were just, I mean, Kobe was ruthlessly ambitious on the court. He was. Who else do we describe that way? Well, those four guys.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, okay, if people don't want to play it, I respectfully, you know, say okay, I tip my hat, as they say, but I'm a little surprised about that.
Michael, we will talk more coming up on Wednesday from the Super Bowl. We appreciate you taking the time today. I know how close you two were. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Mike.
And listen, thanks for having me, and I look forward to seeing you guys. I mean, today, there's no real Super Bowl presence today. It just isn't.
None.
And that's understandable. I don't know what it will look and feel like in 48 hours. I suspect, you know, every hour you go away from something, it changes. But this is so different. This is so different. I mean, people try to find out another thing, and this is like, and they feel fill in the blank. And people in Southern California say it's like Michael Jackson. Okay, maybe. I don't think it is. I think there's some big differences. This is like Roberto Clemente, big differences. Rocky Marciano, the world wasn't as attuned to different people and celebrity and huge stars and people far away in other industries didn't feel the impact 20, 30, 50, 75 years ago that they feel for Kobe Bryant. And some of it surprised me. Some of it's impressed me. And, you know, I look forward to seeing you guys Wednesday, and we'll keep it rolling.
There you go. Thank you, Michael.
Thanks, Mike.
Michael Wilbon does great work. We've had some really good conversations today. Stephen A. joined us. Michael, Tom Thibodeau, we played that interview. If you missed any of the interviews, remember, you can catch our podcast at ESPN Chicago Podcasts.com. Carlos Boozer is going to join us. He was on the famous Redeem Team. You heard, I think, Stephen A. say how important that was to Kobe. And Carlos was a member of that team with him, and then they played together with the Lakers. So the former Bull is going to join us coming up next.
You're listening to Waddle and Sylvie
on ESPN 1000.
Follow us on the gram at Waddle and Sylvie and at ESPN _Chicago.
ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
The breaking news that occurred in the last half hour is the Lakers and Clippers will not play tomorrow. The NBA has postponed that. Numerous reporters, including Woj, all talking about how every worker inside that building knew Kobe in some way over the 20 years. And we're not just talking about like the players or the front office members of the Lakers. We're talking about the staff. you run into them, and they are just not ready to host a basketball game with the amount of grieving that they're doing out in Los Angeles.
And they got no resistance from the Clippers either. I'm sure. I mean, obviously Doc had a relationship with Kobe, and I'm sure some of the players had similar relationships as well.
But yeah, Carlos Boozer does great work for us here at ESPN. And I saw him on SportsCenter yesterday. Booze was on the Redeem team back in 2008, then would be on the Lakers after he left the Bulls. And Booze, I mean, you have a lot of memories with Kobe. I know you guys worked out together. You trained together. You guys battled against each other with Utah and the Lakers. What memory sticks out most?
Yeah, it's tough, man. I mean, I've been trying to piece it all together and try to find the right words to articulate everything. It's hard. You know, obviously we lost the icon to the game, somebody who pushed the game to its limits and pushed all of us to be the best that we could be and challenged us in every moment. But to us, you know, we also lost a brother and a friend. You know, I just talked to him on Christmas Day and wished him and his family Merry Christmas. That was a little over a month ago. And, you know, waking up to the news yesterday was just heartbreaking for all of us. And I feel so bad for Vanessa and the kids. You know, they woke up this morning without a father, without a husband, without a sister, without a daughter. And my heart goes out to them.
Carlos, I think that watching some of the current players and how they've responded is such a testament to what he meant. And, you know, sometimes younger people don't acknowledge or feel the history when it is happening. Do you feel the same way that the response from some of the current players, especially the young guys, was a very moving thing to watch?
Yeah, I think it just speaks volumes to Kobe's reach and what he was able to do and how many people he affected. You know, a lot of these players never even got a chance to play against Kobe or to even have met him before, but they were moved by it. Some of these players did play against him, and he, you know, obviously what Kobe was able to do with his Mamba Academy and teaching all the younger players, whether no matter what sport it was, he was teaching, you know, pros to be better pros, college players to be pros, high school, elementary, and so on. Passing on the lessons that he learned along his journey to make our game better. I even seen people like Aaron Donald in there working out, who was one of the best defensive players on the planet. So it wasn't just basketball he was teaching. I saw Neymar score a goal yesterday and throw up the 2-4 and with his praying hands up.
Yeah.
Kobe affected so many people in a positive way. He was such an icon worldwide, such a model of strive. Go past what you think you can go. You know, go further than what your mind tells you you can go. Remember, Kobe came into the league, had a tough time. He airballed four times in his first playoff series against Utah Jazz. You fast forward the clock, and he won 5 championships, 17, 18 All-Stars, 2 gold medals, one of the top players in the history of ever pick up a basketball. And that's because he put the work in, mixed with his God-given ability, but he put the work in. And that's what he tried to tell everybody. If his message to everybody was always, if you have a dream, if you have a goal, exhaust yourself trying to get there. Don't let nothing get in your way. And that was Kobe, you know, and that's what I take from him.
Former Bull Carlos Boozer joining Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000. When was the first time you met him?
I watched him. I was about to get drafted. I just got done playing at Duke, and we had finished our playoff, our NCAA tournament run. And I signed on with Rob Pelinka, who was me and Kobe's agent throughout our whole career. And he, you know, we came out to L.A. I got a chance to watch Kobe and the Lakers play in a playoff series. I think it was against the Trailblazers. I'm not sure exactly which series it was. But after the game was over, they obviously won by a lot. Him and Shaq were just a vicious tandem. Came in the locker room, and that's when he was like, you know, welcome to the team. You know, talking about the agency that represented both of us. And saying, you know, whenever you come to L.A., you know, come train with me. And then I got drafted by Cleveland, came out to L.A. before the season even started, worked out with Cole, and he was just remarkable, man. We went and worked out for an hour and a half at Santa Monica High School, and then went over to UCLA at the old men's gym and worked out, got some place to pick up with Baron Davis and Paul Pierce, and Corey McGetty was there as well. And then after we got done playing pickup, we played King of the Court, which was just one-on-one. And I'm telling you, Kobe held court for like 40 minutes. Didn't lose a one-on-one battle for 40 minutes. To the point where he just walked away. Like, I'm done. You know what I mean? Like, that's just how good he was.
How do you describe the transition that he made from being a, you know, the ultra competitor as a player to being the compassionate father who was coaching his daughter and successful in business. What type of personality change did you witness?
Yeah, it was remarkable, man. I mean, honestly, I felt like his life was just beginning. You know, he retired from the game of basketball as one of the goats of the game. And then put everything he had into his daughters. I mean, I saw so many videos last night and this morning of Gigi, and her moves looked just like Kobe. You know, it was almost like identical from her free throw shot to her fadeaway to her three-point shot. It was just beautiful to see that. And that's all because he spent the time working with her and the rest of his kids, too. You know, so for me, I feel like his life was just beginning. He won an Oscar with that, it was like a cartoon movie that he did that was beautiful that they played for the first time at his retirement here in L.A. And just watching him grow as a man, like, you know, he spent so much time with his kids after he retired and all the stuff that he missed. But think about what he sacrificed. He sacrificed so much time with his wife and kids trying to be the best player he could be. And he was making all that time back in retirement, you know. So I just we lost a great one yesterday, man.
Booze, what was the Redeem Team practices like? I remember hearing stories about when Michael was on the original Dream Team and how they all drove each other, whether it was Michael against Magic, against Larry, and some of the younger guys. Was it the same vibe in 08 when you needed to win that gold medal again?
Oh, man, it was competitive. You know, Coach K was, he's such a master at practice. And I've been with him since I was 17 when I went to Duke. And the two best players in the world were Kobe and LeBron, right? And we had both of those guys on the same team. And don't get me wrong, he definitely wanted to get their chemistry together so we would play together. Those two guys would play together a lot. But when he wanted to mix it up and make it real competitive, he'd have Kobe on one team and LeBron on one team, and the battles were just epic. They were both going at it, you know, talking trash, but all in good fun, trying to push each other to the limits to get better and achieve great things, and we did. You know, we went to China, won the gold medal, beat a very good Spain team that had the Gasol brothers and like six or seven pros on their team, but Kobe really took over that team as the leader, and it was awesome for us to see his work ethic. You know, he was getting up at 7 o'clock in the morning, going to lift weights. He would go get up shots till about 9:30 or 10, then he would go get breakfast, and we would come back and practice from like 12 to 2. And then he was coming back at night to get another round of shooting in. By the second week of practice, all of us were doing the same thing, you know, and that was the training camp session from Vegas all the way until we won the gold medal in China. And he put that work ethic in, sending a message that we have an opportunity to do something great. Let's not miss the opportunity. Yeah. And we didn't.
Booze, great stories. We appreciate you picking up the phone for us. Thank you.
Thanks, Carlos.
Anytime, man. Be well.
There you go. Carlos Boozer, former Bull, and was on that 08 team. Remember, we lost, the United States did, in 04. And then they needed to redeem themselves, and they won it in 08. I wanted to pick up Eric in Waukegan. You're on ESPN 1000. What's up, Eric?
Hey, how you doing, guys? I just wanted to say, you know, I grew up idolizing Michael Jordan. And so Kobe Bryant's whole career, you know, I disliked him because he came into the league and he was saying how he was better than Michael Jordan. And some of the commentators were saying how close or if he was or was not better than him. So his whole career, I was rooting against him, hoping that he would fail because I was a little nervous that he might be close to Jordan. So when he passed yesterday, I felt terrible that I spent all this time, all this energy rooting against this man for no reason, just because he may be better than Jordan, you know. So I wasted all those years of watching a great basketball player. So I just felt terrible. I still feel terrible right now.
But something tells me,
I won't make the same mistake with LeBron. So I'm going to enjoy the last few years of LeBron's career. I'll be rooting for him.
Something tells me, though, Eric, that you appreciated him, but in a different way, or at the very least, you acknowledged how good he was.
Yes, he was a phenomenal player. But like I said, I grew up idolizing Jordan here in Chicago, and so when anybody would bring up that conversation, you know, I dislike Kobe just for that one reason, and it was just so stupid now that I realize it, you know?
Sure. No, Eric,
that's the essence of sports.
I said the same stuff. I mean, that's been a lot of, you know, when you're a Meathead fan and you care about your team, and when you're playing the Packers, and they've got this guy Favre who you think is cocky and this and he's that, but you're missing the greatness, and you spend all this energy rooting against him and disliking him. And the same thing with the early part of LeBron, and sort of the way I've evolved a lot. And with the Brady stuff, why I've never gotten sick of Brady, because you just never know when it's gone. And in the last, I was the same way with Kobe. I felt threatened as a Bulls fan. Like, first I saw it with Shaq and Penny. Shaq and Penny came along. I'm like, oh, crap. Oh, crap. Bulls are in trouble here, and they beat Michael when he first came back, and then the Bulls overcame them. But now Shaq's in L.A., and he's got this young guy, Kobe. Oh, crap. You know, and you spend so much time rooting against them, we just sometimes as sports fans miss the greatness.
Yeah.
It's a good lesson. Mark Jean Greco's a meathead like us.
Yes,
and
he is.
He will give us his thoughts. He's joining us in studio next.
It's Waddle and Silk. Follow us on the gram at Waddle and Silk and at ESPN underscore Chicago. This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
Continue to remember Kobe Bryant, and the Clippers-Lakers game scheduled for tomorrow has been canceled. That's been the recent news that's developed in the last hour. Bulls are playing tonight at the United Center. Lots of tributes to Kobe. There was a nice I was just talking to Mark Jean Greco, who's in our studio, brought to you by Chicago Cut Steakhouse. Really nice sort of organic way that fans just went to the United Center and just started using chalk. And it's all over the sidewalk, just messages to Kobe.
Yeah, it's this concrete tapestry. It's really cool. It's a mosaic to Black Mamba of everybody just pulling out colored chalks, pieces of chalk, and just writing RIP and all their love notes and everything else. And it wraps around the entire United Center. It's so cool. And like you said, it was truly organic. It just kind of happened. So that was amazing. I got to tell you, you know, when I first heard the news, you know, obviously, I was just frozen in time. Everything stopped. And instead of taking to Twitter or any other social media platform, I just shut down and cocooned. And I texted my very best friends and all my family members and went back and forth with them, you know. And what's tragic following this tragedy is every single person has and will continue to say, so kiss your kids, tell them you love them. You know, stay in contact with your friends and family
members. Don't sweat the small stuff.
Yeah, and this will maybe last for a few days, and then we go back to our daily routine and we forget about everything. So I'm just reminding myself and everybody else out there, don't forget this time, okay?
Did you see Jay Williams when he was on yesterday?
Oh, my God.
He was very raw, and he swore.
Yes.
He's a pro. And he's like, this blank doesn't matter. Let it go. It's not a big deal.
He reported the ESPN studios there. He was there for 24 hours nonstop. And, you know, it touched him like Tracy McGrady broke down and cried on the jump today on ESPN. Jerry West, you know, who traded for Kobe on draft night, you know, with Charlotte. I mean, these people just could not contain themselves and was so genuine. And again, he touched so many people. He transcended basketball. And he seems so at peace now because he started his new life as this documentary producer. I mean, who's won 5 Larry O'Brien trophies and an Oscar? And he has this little 3-minute animated short that just blew up. He's so excited about that, coaching his daughter, you know, running his academy. He's on the Olympics board in Los Angeles. I mean, he was like so glad to have this second opportunity because, you know, he retired, didn't go to Lakers games, did not stay in touch with the organization. Then he suddenly finds out, wait, my daughter Gianna loves basketball. I'm all back in.
I thought that was awesome.
And, you know, that piece of video we've seen 500,000 times over the last 30 hours is him sitting courtside talking to her, explaining a nuance of a play, and she kind of interrupts, and she had the answer, and he's like, yes, that was the coolest thing. That had more impact on me than showing any of his highlights of shooting free throws with a torn Achilles, scoring 81, scoring 60 in his last game.
See, and I said the same thing because, listen, my memory, it fails me at times, especially when it comes to sports. So, I remember some of the great moments, and I remember how great a player he was. I just thought it was really cool the last couple of years to see what you were talking about, how he had filled that void that basketball, you know, no longer having basketball with so many other different endeavors. And to transfer all of that energy and attention from being the best at that sport to finding a way to recreate that adrenaline rush and that sense of competition and accomplishment in another way. And I think that's really cool to see. You know, how he was, he had segued away from being Kobe Bryant, the dominant basketball player, to Kobe Bryant, who was so talented and accomplished in so many other fields. That's the like, kind of the memory I had yesterday when I was
super likable, too, yeah. The way he told stories.
He had so much charisma, yeah. Such a presence. Now, I never had the opportunity to do a sit-down one-on-one with Kobe, but I was part of his news conferences, and I've been around his locker with a dozen other cameras and everything else, so I never had that one-on-one engagement. And people in Chicago, you know, my feeling about Kobe Bryant was, as he ascended to superstardom, early to midway through his career, I'm like, he's a Jordan clone. He's a Michael mimic. Yeah, he's a great player, but, you know, and everybody knows the story of growing up in Italy where his dad was playing. He dissected every piece of tape on Jordan, not only modeled his game and his moves after Michael on the court, but it was the tongue, the voice, the cadence, the mannerisms, even the fist pump
was exactly
was
the
Michael.
Same.
And so, but I'm okay with that, you know, because, you know, people used to say that as a criticism.
Right.
Like, be your own man and develop your own game and have your own style. Well, guess what? He went on to, and I don't ever want to judge people by their stats, but he went on to out Michael in many categories. 18-time All-Star. Michael was 14. You know, Michael had 6 trophies. He had 5. But again, you know, he had records that Michael didn't have, and everybody's going to argue about the Mount Rushmore. That's what sports is about, an argument. Michael's always going to be number one. And then you debate whether it's LeBron Kobe or Kobe LeBron. I think that's the argument. But that's great that he modeled himself after Michael. Then he went on to become his own superstar. He had as big an impact outside of basketball as being one of the greatest athletes of all time to match Jordan.
And it's rare to say that when you have all that stuff in basketball that maybe the best was yet to come. And that's what we're not going to be able to experience. That he had so much stuff that he could have done. This is Kobe on what you were just talking about. This was from recently. Abdallah, where was this one from when he talks about how he almost was a Bull? We played this very early in the show, and yet he embraced the fact and always sort of had this fantasy of becoming a Chicago Bull. Do you know where this one came from?
I believe this is from one of his conversations that he did afterwards with, it's either the one with Shaq, with the one that they showed with Shaq, but before they brought Shaq in, or it's one of the ones that he did, like he did this one where it's him on this stage with like a business guy or something. Okay. I don't remember his name.
So this is him talking about how he almost was a Bull and Michael's influence.
No words can really do it justice because, you know, as a kid growing up in Italy, I mean, all I had was video. And so I studied everything. I studied every player. And then once I came back to the States and I realized I wasn't going to be 6'9", I started studying Michael exclusively. And then when I came to the league and matching up against him, what I found is I found that he was extremely open to having a relationship, a mentor relationship, and giving me a great amount of advice and an amazing amount of detail. Strategies, workout regimens, and things like that. So, seriously, I mean, I don't think people really understand the amount of impact that he's had on me as a player and as a leader. So if I was fortunate enough to come here, right, if that trade had happened and I'd be here, it's not a pressure situation to live up to what he's done. It's more like, man, can I carry on this man's legacy? Can I do it justice, right? Can I represent Chicago the way that it should be represented in his honor? So, just a tremendous, tremendous amount of influence.
Have you ever heard that before? I thought that was pretty remarkable.
I have a long, long time ago, but that's great to replay that. I mean, that is just stunning. That says
it
all
right
there.
When he was here in Chicago. This is a side of the humorous side. We played this recently, and you may have been in here when we played it on how he won 5, but he could have won 12.
Would Shaq be if he had your work ethic? He'd be the greatest of all time.
If Shaq had your work,
he'd be the greatest of all time.
Greatest of all time by a mile.
Sure. He'd be the first to tell you that, for sure. I mean, this guy was a force like I have never seen. Man, this dude was, he did not care. He was mean. He was nasty. He was competitive. He was vindictive. I mean, he was, yeah. I wish he was in the gym. I would have had 12 rings.
So he talks about how the difference between the want.
And then he was on CBS Late Late Show recently, and they tried to nail him down and say, look, you know, who is the best? Is it you, Michael, or LeBron. And he goes, no, I don't want to. He finally goes, okay, I'm the best, then Michael, then LeBron, okay? You know, but that, again, shows his competitive nature, you know, putting himself first.
Yeah.
And that's not a bad thing either.
John Paxson just met the media. They talked about, I think, free agency. In 04, Kobe was a free agent. The Bulls had this secret meeting with him, and it didn't go public for a week. And then there was another time where he thought the Bulls may trade for Kobe, and Pax talked about Kobe, and we'll play that coming up next.
Waddle and Sylvie, weekdays 2 to 6.
Follow on Twitter at Waddle and Sylvie and at TWaddle87. ESPN 1000.
Chicago's home for sports.
Mark Jean Greco is in studio. He's brought to you by Chicago Cut Steakhouse, LaSalle on the River. Just saw a listener over the weekend say, after all this time, for the first time, he decided to try Chicago
Twitter.
Cut, and he absolutely loved it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Fillet.
Sure. Nice.
Check him out.
Why did he put it off so much?
Why
did he put it off so long?
I don't know.
Come on. Yeah, no, it's the best. It is the absolute best.
Did you go this weekend?
No, I did not.
Thought there was
stayed
a chance
home.
You were...
Yeah, there was a chance, but stayed home.
Okay.
Had some relatives in, and just kind of hung out of my place.
Cool.
So it was cool.
Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
John Paxson met the media at the United Center before their game with the San Antonio Spurs. Here's what he had to say about Kobe Bryant.
Obviously, this is a really tough time for our game. Given what happened yesterday, I think it goes without saying that Kobe Bryant was one of the great players in the history of our game. And, you know, so much of our thoughts last 24-plus hours have been about his family, the other families, what they all must be going through. You know, events like this show how connected people in sport can be with not only the fan base, but those of us who were in the game. You didn't have to have the greatest type of connection, but just the game itself means so much to me. The respect that the great ones have, you don't see it very often, so you appreciate it. And so it's a really sad day and a really sad time for the league. And I know just seeing some of our young kids in there, the guys that have been so influenced by him over the years, you can tell they're shaken up. And, you know, we've seen that all around the league the last 24 hours, and it's been really powerful. So.
Pax also told the story where they went after him in 04. And that came out yesterday, too. I think Casey Johnson told the story. The news didn't get out when he was a free agent that he was seriously considering. It was Jerry Reinsdorf along with Pax who went out there. And they met with him. And I guess he was very interested in the Bulls. But then, you know, and then he met with the Clippers, too. Then he ended up re-upping with the Lakers. When I thought he was going to be a Bull was when we first started. I remember while it was 07 or whatever.
Right.
And we did a show at 115 Bourbon Street. And I pulled over because SportsCenter wanted me to go on live on a phone line because it got so hot at that time. Remember, Rick Bucher said 99.9% Kobe would not play with the Lakers again. At that moment, I really thought we spent a couple of shows that the Bulls were going to trade for Kobe Bryant.
I mean, think about it. Going back in time, everyone was apprehensive. The bigger names were very apprehensive of following in Michael's or trying to walk in Michael's shoes here in Chicago.
Right.
Kobe was not affected by that.
Yeah, and along with all his accomplishments, whenever this happens to a superstar, iconic celebrity, I stopped in my tracks and everything shut down when I heard it. For me, a person of my generation, I immediately felt like John Lennon, Marvin Gaye, John F. Kennedy Jr., and even the assassination of John F. Kennedy. Like, the aftermath, the feeling you have. You know, none of these are related the way they all died, but I'm talking about the feeling you had when you hear something like that. And, of course, with all his incredible accomplishments, you know, all the dark stuff comes out as well. And it's so sad because he had turned his life around, repaired his marriage after the Eagle, Colorado rape case, settled with a civil suit, turns his marriage around, has these beautiful daughters. And then, you know, his relationship with his parents, you know, he didn't talk to his siblings, his sisters. They were estranged. His parents selling his memorabilia. And he's talking about, I gave them too much money, and they were too dependent on me. It ruined our relationship. Mm. So you got to think of all the dark stuff that he came from and tried to fix to go along with Kobe Bryant, the coolest dude on earth.
Right, and that's why, like Stephen A. said, he was happiest now.
Yeah. Yes.
After all that. Mike's in DeMont. You're on ESPN 1000. Hey, Mikey.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I grew up a Chicago fan, Jordan fan, obviously, but he won his last title when I was eight. And, for me growing up, Kobe was the guy, my favorite player. But, the one lasting image that I have, and everyone's talking about, you know, the ruptured Achilles at 81 points and 60 in his final game. For me, it's actually after his final game, that day, that post-game press conference, he sat down for 30 or 35 minutes and took every question in the room. But his ability to seamlessly switch between English and French and Spanish and Chinese and just answer all these questions in all these different languages so eloquently, it showed kind of what you guys have talked about over this last 20 minutes or so about how he really was destined for so much greater than just what he did on the court. And I think that's why it's had such a crazy global impact. Like, there's just a different feeling in the air today.
Absolutely. Great call. And, you know, people snickered the other day when Kobe said these four WNBA players could play in the NBA. But the fact that his daughter was so attached to the game and so addicted to the game has launched this academy, and the way he's championing women's basketball was unreal.
I said this earlier, too. Look, I mean, it's up to each individual to use whatever platform you have, regardless of your level of fame, fortune, and influence, to use it however you see fit. You know, there have been a lot of people over the course of time that have been upset with Michael that he didn't use his platform in the way that they thought he should use his platform. I just personally believe it's up to the individual. You use your platform however you want to. It was cool to watch him use his platform in the manner that he did, supporting women's athletics.
Yeah.
Getting involved in, you know, the arts with regard to, you know, making the short movie that ended up with him winning the Academy Award, his entry into the business world and doing the things he was doing, the numerous, you know, events and the involvement with all kinds of charities. I mean, he used his platform in a very admirable and impressive way.
And along those lines, you know, and it's up to the individual. And I have really no right to say this, but it's would have been my preference if I would have seen Michael and LeBron on camera. But, you know, they tweeted out their feelings, and, you know.
I don't think LeBron has yet. And now, remember,
that's what I'm waiting for.
He just passed Kobe in Philadelphia. You know, and then all of a sudden to be raving about Kobe, and then the next thing you know, your plane lands in L.A. and Kobe's gone. Look, I mean, that.
Yeah, my point is it's really difficult. So
there's some trauma.
Your tweet is the only thing you can really get out at this point. Same with Shaq, you know. We're expecting to see Shaq on camera, you know. Scotty went on Good Morning America and some other outlets, you know.
He had great tweets today, Scotty.
Yeah,
Scotty really went deep on what he was. But, like, Mark, you even said you didn't know what to do. You just reached out to friends.
That's where I was going with this. It's like everybody deals with it in their own way. So I certainly don't hold it against anybody. That's how individuals cope with things like this. I'm just saying I would love to have seen them, like Tracy McGrady and others. But, you know, that's their business.
Right.
So, I mean, I just
that's
thought
how I'd, I feel about
that's
it.
That's how I throw it out.
I just
out
thought
there.
It was really cool to build on what the caller said, too. I mean, we all look at sports figures as just sports figures, and you think, well, maybe their talents are contained to just the sport they play. And that's not the case, and that's being narrow-minded about stuff. But for him, he spoke several languages.
Yeah.
He was a successful businessman.
And you know I like the peek behind the curtain.
Yes.
And then that's going to make me sound creepier than I
really am. No, I know what you mean, though. Yeah.
But, like, he did this whole documentary with Spike Lee back in 07 about preparing for a game.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And then, like, and he's just giving you more of a look at what he's like away from the court, where when Michael went away, and like you said, it's fine for Michael.
Right.
Michael's sort of a hermit. Even though he owns a team in the NBA.
You don't hear
Do you ever get anything?
Not at all.
Like
what
Michael is up to or what Michael is doing?
And like I said, I don't have ill feelings about that. I would love as a voyeur and a fan to know more about it and see more about Michael. He's chosen to do things in a different fashion, and I totally respect that, to each their own. But as a voyeur and a fan, I kind of thought it was cool to see all the things that Kobe Bryant was involved in, the
absolutely.
Depth of his personality and
Yeah.
How he had...
And I would love to have talked to him after retirement, because it's been my experience, having been in this business for like 42 years or whatever. I've developed some friendships with players after they had retired, because you really don't get tight with any professional athletes while they're playing, because there's that wall between media and player, yeah. And it's adversarial many times, and a lot of players don't like me at all, but and coaches too. But it's one of those things where you really get to know the individual,
yeah,
as a person after that part of their life has passed,
yeah.
And now you're more on an open, I don't want to say level, but sure, open, like playing field.
Our relationship with Urlacher, yeah, no, our no relationship with different. Jay Cutler.
Yeah,
you know.
I would like the last thing I personally would just like to say is just again that remember everyone, not just Kobe and his beautiful daughter, but remember the other seven that passed away, yeah, in this horrible,
yeah,
tragedy.
I'm glad
as
we
well.
Got to that. Yeah.
You know, so
because
just remember there was, you know, there's a lot of tragedy, and there are a lot of people that were horribly affected by
it. I hope they're part of the tribute tonight at the United, yeah, Center.
Yes. So that will be very interesting. Stephen A. joined us earlier today. Fantastic. Him and Kobe were very close. That will be coming up here in a couple of minutes. Thank you to him and Michael Wilbon and Carlos Boozer and Mark Jean Greco. Jonathan Hood will have great thoughts at 7 o'clock. He's live and local. Thanks to Eric Ostrowski, who is in for Jeff Meller today. Also, Adam Abdallah for Markey and Waddle. I'm Sylvie. It's ESPN 1000. Have yourself a great Monday night.
It's the classic.
That was fun stuff. That's fun stuff.
Hi, it's Andre Doss, including myself, Ed Belfort.
Who's getting wild tonight? That's what I'm talking about, baby.
No high from you.
What?
No high from you.
I give him more buys than highs.
Waddle, waddle, waddle. Penny waddled away. Waddle, waddle. Till the very next day. Bum, 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 bum.
And thank you to all a good night.